This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Rebecca Roberts in Washington. Neil Conan is away. No matter how you slice it, the economy is still fragile, especially the job market. American businesses cut another 85,000 jobs in December. Since the economic downturn began over 2 years ago, more than 7 million jobs have been lost. During that time, we've checked in periodically with guests and with you, our listeners, to see how you've been doing during the economic tumult. Kevin Wilk shared a story in December of 2008. He had just been laid off for the second time in 1 year.
But what's kind of funny is, or funny, I guess, in a strange way, is that after about a half an hour of getting all the sad looks and I'm so sorry, I know you're going to be fine, things are going to go well, everything happens for a reason, after about an hour you go, well, I'm sick of that.
Yeah.
I'm going to leave.
We'll check back in with Kevin Wilk in a moment to hear how he's doing today, and we want to hear from you. Later in the hour, a tribute to Muhammad Ali from The Man He Fought. But first, what are the economic indicators in your life that tell you things are getting better or not? The number here in Washington is 800-989-8255. Our email address is talk@npr.org, and you can join the conversation at our website. Go to npr.org and click on Talk of the Nation. Kevin Wilk joins us on the line from Walnut Creek, California. Welcome back.
Hi, thank you very much.
So we just heard that clip of tape when you talked to Neil Conan. You had just gotten your second pink slip. That was 13 months ago. How are things now?
Well, things certainly are better. I got a new job towards the end of last year, and that's been going well with a good, stable company. Fingers crossed, of course. But certainly it was an interesting 8-9 months there where after the second round of layoffs, companies really had tightened up on hiring people and were taking forever to make decisions. I had a number of interviews, and companies either decided not to hire anybody or to just continue the interview process so long that everything timed out.
So it wasn't like you were sitting home watching daytime TV. You were actually going out and interviewing. It was just taking a long time?
Oh, absolutely. I was interviewing pretty much on a consistent basis and deciding which companies seemed like the best fit for me. So I got a lot more calls from recruiters than I actually wanted to have interviews with those companies, because especially after the second layoff with a high-tech company that was a startup, I really wanted to have a company that was more stable and not have something that could potentially rear its ugly head again in about 3 to 6 months.
And what did you hear from the companies who didn't hire you?
It really varied. In some cases, they knew that if they waited one more week, there would be another 5,000 people in the internet industry, and that's the industry that I work in, that are available due to different layoffs. In fact, of course, AOL has mentioned they're going to be laying off several thousand people this week. So it just continues along that way, and companies feel, well, if we wait a couple more weeks, there'll be more people in the marketplace. The other thing they would do is change the job description midway through the interviews, and they would potentially look at somebody, or they would change the description to have it be a lesser role, and I saw titles I'd never seen before, things like junior account executive assistant. I mean, things that obviously they were looking to try to lowball the salary and be able to get somebody that still has a lot of qualifications. So I'd hear that. I would also hear that they were just continuing to look into the marketplace and in some cases would hire out a hire person that they were looking originally in San Francisco, and they might decide to hire that person in L.A. instead for a variety of reasons.
And of the people you knew who were laid off with you and your wife, who at one point was also laid off, are people getting back to work?
Well, luckily my wife was able to find a job within about a month. But, yeah, certainly that was a scary month there where neither of us had a full-time job. And I was still doing contract work with some companies, but nothing had been full-time. And the people that I'd been talking to, some of them were able to get other jobs within about 3 to 6 months. There's a couple people I know that still aren't looking. In some cases, it has opened up in some of the arenas, but in other cases, it's still very tight. In fact, even just kind of doing a peek at what the job boards were looking like in the last couple of months, there still really isn't a lot of hiring done at some of these companies that had layoffs in the last 12 to 18 months.
Let's bring another voice into this conversation. Stephen Greenhouse covers labor and workplace issues for the New York Times. He's also written The Big Squeeze, Tough Times for the American Worker. He joins me here in Studio 3A. Welcome.
Nice to be here, Rebecca.
Now, you were on the show in December 2008 when Kevin Wilk was on before. And after you heard his story, you said then, quote, "It's very cold out there in the job market." Would you still say that today?
It's probably a little warmer now. It's still fairly cold. And Kevin, congratulations. I think many unemployed people would be jealous that you had many recruiters knocking at your door. Many unemployed wish that they had recruiters knocking at their door. But, Rebecca, things are not as cold as before. A year ago, the nation was losing nearly 700,000 jobs a month. Over the past 3 months, we've averaged losing one-tenth of that, 70,000 jobs a month, which is still too much. You know, economists were debating a few weeks ago whether we'll finally have a month where we see an increase in employment rather than a decrease. Well, in December, the number of jobs were down 85,000, but then in revising the figures for November, we see that actually there was an increase in jobs. So voila, eureka, we had a nice little increase, but then things seem to turn bad again. And now economists are debating, are we going to have a double-dip recession where we finally started recovering and now things are getting worse? Hopefully, some of the $787 billion stimulus package is still going to be played out, still going to be pumped into the economy, and that will create more jobs.
That revising the numbers for November, it always sounds a little bit like cooking the books. What exactly goes on when those numbers are revised?
The government surveys employers, and employers tell them how many jobs they have in the payroll, how many less, how many more, and they do a preliminary survey and they release it each month. And then in the subsequent month, they study it more. Businesses give more definite numbers, and they might say, and the government might conclude, whoops, we were too high last month, we were too low last month. So originally, for November, Rebecca, the government had said the U.S. had lost 11,000 jobs. Now it says we actually gained 4,000 jobs. So there are these constant revisions. But again, one shouldn't look too much at any one month. It's more the overall trend, and the overall trend is getting better. We've gone from losing 700,000 a month to losing just 70,000 a month. And some economists are predicting that, you know, certainly over the next few months we will see bona fide job growth. But other economists say, well, the housing industry isn't doing very well, and manufacturing has been going up for the past 5 months, and that's created some optimism, and the stock market's doing well, and oil prices are going up, which consumers hate, but it does point to some growing economic strength, and temporary employment is up, and that's usually a green shoot, a robin on the lawn, indicating that things are going to get better. But the job numbers for December weren't good. What's happening with housing sales and foreclosures is not good. So there's a real debate among economists whether we're at a point where we're starting to lift off or whether we're going to remain flat.
And Kevin Wilk, in addition to your own employment situation, you are in sales. Are you starting to see business pick up?
Business has started to pick up. But again, people are very cautious. A lot of clients are looking at it like trying to see how much they can get away with without having to really go full bore and spend what they typically would be spending in an average year. And I think Stephen said it best in terms of it's warmer out there, but and certainly in the East people can appreciate this. If it's 20 degrees one week, it's 25 the next. It may be warmer, but it's still cold.
Kevin Wilk, thank you so much for joining us.
Absolutely.
Kevin Wilk is now Director of Sales and Business Development for the West at the online market company Search Ignite. He spoke to us from Walnut Creek, California. And let me turn this out to our listeners. What are your economic indicators? What do you look to figure out how the economy is doing in your world? And are they changing from where they might have been a year ago? We have, for instance, an email from Barbara in Taos, New Mexico, who says she's been self-employed since 1981. She works with graphic designers, reading their final proofs before they go to press. So I have an assortment of clients who in turn each have a variety of clients. I have never seen business as slow as last year's was in my 29 years of business, but I've received more jobs in the first 12 days of 2010 from a wider variety of source companies than for the entire month of December. So that's obviously anecdotal evidence, not necessarily looking at a big picture. But Stephen Greenhouse, is there a consensus about whether or not we are in a recovery? Is the recession over?
Well, technically, the recession is over in that we had job growth. The nation's economic output rose in the third quarter. But there's a panel of economic experts who make the official ruling based perhaps not just on whether there's official growth but what's happening with the unemployment rate. But most economists, led by Larry Summers, the White House's chief economist, say, you know, officially the recession is over. But, you know, when we see what happened in December with the drop in jobs, when we see housing prices falling, when we see housing construction falling, some people say, wait, it's too early. It's too early to officially pronounce the end of the recession. Different show, sorry.
Well, also this gets to the idea that these judgments are reactive, not proactive, that they're looking at past data.
Yes. And it was interesting having Kevin, you know, who has a wonderful story in California. You know, there's a whole other issue we haven't raised yet is the humongous fiscal crisis in states and cities. And, you know, California, Governor Schwarzenegger faces a $20 billion deficit. And it's possible he might have to lay off several hundred thousand state workers. I mean, things are really bad. And that might have to get played out. I've seen stories saying that the states next year have a total deficit of like $350 billion. And that could drag us down pretty seriously if the states really start laying off hundreds of thousands of workers. So again,
not to mention the trickle down to then counties and municipalities.
Yes, and these people won't be able to, you know, shop in Walmart or buy new cars. I mean, so there'd be a huge trickle down effect, and that's why many economists keep saying, well, it's too early to say we're out of the woods.
We are talking to Stephen Greenhouse. He is the labor and workplace correspondent for The New York Times. He's also the author of The Big Squeeze, Tough Times for the American Worker. And we are talking to you about what economic indicators you see in your life, whether it's your job or your small business or just the for sale signs in your neighborhood. What sort of things do you look to tell you how the economy is doing where you live and where what direction are those signs pointing in? Our number, 800-989-8255. Our email is talk@npr.org. And you can join the conversation on the website at npr.org/talkofthenation. I'm Rebecca Roberts. This is Talk of the Nation from NPR News. This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Rebecca Roberts in Washington. As we start 2010, the economic outlook is mixed. Some economists tell us things are getting better, while others warn we aren't nearly out of the woods yet. We're talking with New York Times labor correspondent Stephen Greenhouse today, and we want to hear about you. What are the economic indicators in your life? The phone number is 800-989-8255. The email address is talk@npr.org. Let's hear from Tom in Bannister, Michigan. Tom, welcome to Talk of the Nation.
Yes, nice to talk to you today. Thank you.
You too.
Well, I have got some economic indicators for your guest and for some of the other folks that want to talk about the recession being over. I'd love to offer them a walking tour of Flint, Michigan, and Detroit, and little towns like Hawassa, watching all the stores still continue to close and the houses go up for sale. It's not over here. I've been out of work for a year and a half now as a manufacturing executive. I've had one interview. I must have 1,000 resumes out on the street.
And, Tom, do you have any signs of it changing, or is it just pretty bleak
no,
there in Michigan?
No, it's just quite frankly, we get the feeling here in Michigan that when we hear all this stuff from the rest of the country, it's either whistling in the dark or they just don't know what's really going on. It's getting worse here, much worse.
Tom, thanks.
And they really should pay attention because it's a disaster here. We've got people at our church. There are families that are joining the homeless people that we used to just serve the homeless on Saturday mornings with breakfast. Now we got families coming in.
Tom, thanks for your call. this gets to the point, Stephen Greenhouse, that obviously it's a big country. There are a lot of different economies within the national economy. And when you hear a voice like Tom's in Michigan or hear that 65% of Nevada homeowners are underwater, recovery means different things in different places.
Right. I'm glad Tom called, and he is a very eloquent story. And thank you, Tom. During the break, I wrote down three words, macro, Detroit, and Dayton. And I, my concerns are, one, what happens if the job recovery stalls out and the stimulus package really starts to lose its force? Then the whole nation really, the whole nation's economy might stall, and we might face a situation like the one Japan faced in the 1990s, where it's just listless year after year with very little economic growth, very little income growth, very little job growth. So that's one problem we as a nation have to worry about. The other problem is exactly the one Tom raised when I wrote down Detroit and Dayton. There are these important manufacturing, declining manufacturing centers that have been hit extremely hard, not just during the recession that began in December 2007, but for the whole decade. In writing my book, The Big Squeeze, one of the statistics that astounded me is that, we as a nation have lost so many manufacturing jobs since the year 2000. We've lost nearly one in three manufacturing jobs, 6 million manufacturing jobs in the past decade. And until recently, it seemed that the nation and the government largely ignored the decimation, the collapse of manufacturing in so many communities across the nation. And Michigan, and again, I'm sorry, Tom, is ground zero. Detroit, Flint are ground zero for this problem. And I think we as a nation really have to try to figure out, how are we going to turn around these beleaguered manufacturing communities? The Obama administration, Congress are starting some initial efforts with, trying to create lots of green jobs, trying to spend more money on infrastructure. But a lot of people are saying, especially in places like Flint, that it's still too little and maybe too late.
And that idea that there may be a double dip to this recession, that it's too early to talk of recovery, is echoed by a lot of economists. Paul Krugman, for example, who wrote an op-ed in your newspaper, The New York Times, he says, during the good years of the last decade, such as they were, growth was driven by a housing boom and a consumer spending surge. Neither is coming back. There can't be a new housing boom while the nation is still strewn with vacant houses and apartments left behind by the previous boom. And consumers, who are $11 trillion poorer than they were before the housing bust, are in no position to return to the buy now, save habits of yore.
Rebecca, it's not an easy situation. Paul Krugman won a Nobel Prize in economics, something I could only dream about. But, the learned columnist makes some very, very good points. Before during the 1990s and early this decade, or earlier this century, the economy was really lifted by housing, by consumer spending, in the late 1990s by the high-tech bubble. Now, with the economy teetering, wavering, it's still not clear where is the oomph, where's the momentum going to come to really lift the economy. Consumers, we would like consumers to do it, but so many consumers are strapped with debt and hurting because their housing prices have declined and about 2 million people are expected to have their homes foreclosed upon. Over the past 10 years, a lot of people took money out of their houses. Their housing prices skyrocketed, so they would take a second mortgage and use that money to buy a new car or to buy a big screen TV. With housing prices declining, that ain't going to happen much anymore. So economists are wondering, where's the momentum going to come from? Perhaps the higher stock market will create some confidence and people will have some money to spend. But I think one of the hopes are increased government spending on infrastructure and green jobs. But the Obama administration is running into far more opposition than it expected whenever it says we have to spend more to create jobs. The Republicans argue that the deficit was already a gazillion dollars, and we don't – I exaggerate – more than $1 trillion. And
that's not a number, by the way.
the deficit was already – huge, and we can't stand an even larger deficit and then pass it down to our children and grandchildren. And the Obama administration very quickly responds, well, with the economy going so slowly, with so many people unemployed, with the nation spending so much on unemployment benefits, that is in itself causing reduced tax revenues and more spending, and that is increasing the deficit.
On the subject of consumer spending, we have an email from Reed in Sacramento who says, the economic indicators in my own life which tell me things are improving, I'm finally getting my credit card debt paid off. The tough economic times light a fire under my hind to take control of my finances in ways that I knew I had become irresponsible over the last several years. I'm finally seeing an end in sight. Now, while paying off his credit card debt is an admirable thing for Reed, it is not increasing consumer spending in a way that necessarily helps on a macro level.
That's true, but hopefully in 6 months or a year, Reed will have paid down enough of his debt that he could go out and buy that that HDTV he wants, or maybe he'll even buy some things made in America. We'll have to figure out what's made in America nowadays. I'm kidding.
But it also brings up the question of, is there change in economic behavior that might last beyond the short term?
Oh, absolutely, Rebecca. And I think that's what Paul Krugman was pointing out. Consumers overspent. They went far too high into debt. Consumers a few years ago borrowed, you know, the consumer debt levels were 130% of their annual income, and that was a record level. So, you know, many hardworking Americans like Reed realized, I was over my head in debt. I have to pay down some of my debt. And if people can, if Americans continue paying down their debt, not just for the next 2 months, but for the next 2 years or 6 years, that will restrain consumer spending. And since consumer spending has represented 70% of the economy, restrained consumer spending will hurt economic growth long term. So economists say we need infrastructure spending, spending on green jobs, and they're hoping, praying that we could somehow increase exports, which is hard when we're competing against a juggernaut like China.
Let's take a call from Susan in Santa Rosa, California. Susan, welcome to Talk of the Nation.
Thank you. Can you hear me?
I can now.
Okay, good. I am a psychologist in Santa Rosa, California, and my practice and the practices of my colleagues are all down from 30 to 40%. That's quite extensive, and the reason is our patients can no longer afford to come in to see us. Now, you know, the range of fees that, you know, are charged runs from, you know, anything from HMO coverage to fee for services, which is direct payments, and that could range anywhere from $75 to $150. People are unable to afford coming in. Construction folks, contractors, people in banking, whatever it is, we're unable. These folks are cutting us out of their lives because they can't. They've lost jobs. Huge numbers of people have lost jobs in Northern California. The other thing is, I work with, and I know that folks possibly on this station don't really want to, or on this program don't want to hear about this, but I work with the disabled in part of my job, and those folks, they literally don't have enough money any longer to buy food, let alone medicine.
Susan, thank you so much for your call. As a psychologist, it's one of those things where you could see someone looking at a budget and thinking, well, maybe that's something that has to go. You know, it's something that it is spending on me, and it's not my house or my children's education or my health care. You know, it is your health care, but, you know, you can see where that might be something that it cuts out of a family budget. And again, in terms of changing behavior, maybe they don't go back. You know, maybe her client list is down forever.
That's very possible, Rebecca. We have 15 million unemployed, right? And if you include workers who have given up looking for work and workers who want full-time jobs but are involuntarily working part-time, there are 27 million people defined as unemployed or underemployed. And some of them probably were Susan's clients, and a lot of them might be unemployed and can't afford it. A lot of them might be underemployed and say, I can't afford the $75. I would imagine that the state of California is cutting back in reimbursements. And we talk about the trickle-down effect. When workers are laid off, even psychologists, you know, and many, many others can get hurt. I mean, I'm sure there are garage mechanics around you who aren't getting as much business, and nail salons and restaurants. I mean, everyone is being hurt as unemployment increases.
There's an interesting email here from Brent in Detroit who says, I work in a drugstore and get good watermark because we sell items that are semi-necessary, like over-the-counter meds and baby care. that people don't want to give up but will cut back on. Some have started buying what they need one thing at a time as opposed to filling up a cart. Our foot traffic has tripled, but our sales have been cut in half. Also, most people have stopped buying foodstuffs with us that aren't on sale, aside from lower-income shoppers without transportation. Interesting anecdotal account from Detroit. And before we get too far into the despair, I want to read a different quotation. This is Daniel Gross in Newsweek. He's got a piece called Snap Out of It, The Dangers of Economic Pessimism. He writes, if excessive optimism was the near-fatal pose in 2008, blind pessimism has emerged as the reflexive post-bust crouch, and it has led the economic establishment to miss yet another inflection point. While we were wringing our hands about America's financial and industrial crisis, we ignored a parallel narrative that was emerging, the repairing of balance sheets, an embrace of reality, a nascent recovery. The same folks who chased the recession down are likely now to chase the recovery up.
Can I paraphrase a great president? The only thing to be pessimistic about is too much pessimism. Now, the only thing to fear is fear itself. In a sense, there is a great lack of confidence among consumers. And some people are need to repay down their debts. And it's understandable that they're not buying as much, shopping as much as before. But I think a lot of people...
Or
investing in the stock market, of course. But I think a lot of people probably are in decent financial shape, and they're saying, well, the economy doesn't look good. I'm not going to spend. We're going to save this for a rainy day in case we get laid off a year from now. And I think a lot of people are holding back in investing in buying a new car, and that's going to hold back the economy. And Dan Gross makes a very good point. You know, if there weren't so much pessimism, if there were more confidence, maybe people would go out and spend a lot more and invest a lot more, and that might give the economy some of the momentum it needs. But if people get over-exuberant and spend too much and go into too heavy debt again, then we could face some of the problems that we did that caused this recession.
We are talking with Stephen Greenhouse about the new economy in the new year, or the old economy in the new year. You can join us at 800-989-8255. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. Let's hear from Jim in Jacksonville, Florida. Jim, welcome to Talk the Nation.
Yeah, hey, how are you doing today?
Good, how are you?
Good. I serve summons for foreclosures, and I'm in Florida. And I can tell you, our business is busy as ever. And, I work 12 to 14-hour days, 5-6 days a week. And we're getting more and more work as far as foreclosures every day.
So this is the opposite to the psychologist whose business is down in an economy, someone who serves summons on foreclosures.
No, my business is good, but the problem is I'm telling people their houses are being foreclosed on.
Right. And you haven't seen that slow down at all, Jim?
Quite the opposite.
Thanks for your call. We've talked a little bit about the housing market. Florida certainly was one of the places where the bubble burst most dramatically. How big an impact is that in the economy as a whole?
It's a very, very big impact. Some economists say that the main force lifting the economy in the first decade of this century, which we never know what to call the aughts or the noughties or in the first decade, was the housing bubble, and that created several million construction jobs. And since the recession started in December 2007, we as a nation have lost 1.6 million construction jobs, and unemployment construction is well over 10%. And Jim makes a very good point. Foreclosures are a problem and will remain a big problem, apparently. Economists say there were 1.7 million foreclosures in 2008, slightly more than that last year, and they're expecting 2.4 million this year, so it keeps increasing. And the Obama administration supposedly has a program to reduce the number of foreclosures, but the verdict generally is that it really does far too little and isn't really reducing foreclosures very effectively. So while bad news hurt the therapist business in Santa Rosa, the bad news is helping Jim's business in Florida, and we keep wondering when is the housing market going to turn around.
We have an email. This is a separate point from Sheila, who says, most of my friends lucky enough to have a job are physically and emotionally stressed since they've acquired new responsibilities from laid-off coworkers in addition to their own work without any increase in pay. What experts refer to as increased productivity is, in fact, squeezing workers to the point of exhaustion. I'm worried that when the economy picks up, these companies won't see any financial advantage to rehiring new workers.
That's an excellent point. In my book, The Big Squeeze, I write at length about that phenomenon where companies will downsize, lay off thousands of people, and those who remain, who in ways are lucky because they still have their jobs, they feel much more stressed. They're worried that they're going to be in the next round of layoffs. They have to take the responsibilities of those who are laid off. They're worried that, well, there might be another round of layoffs, so I better work real hard to make sure that the next person zapped is not me, is the person sitting next to me. So it's a very difficult situation.
That's Stephen Greenhouse, labor and workplace correspondent for The New York Times and author of The Big Squeeze, Tough Times for the American Worker. Thank you so much for joining us.
Pleasure to be here. Thank you.
Coming up, a new documentary looks at Muhammad Ali through the eyes of the men he met in the ring. That's next. I'm Rebecca Roberts. It's Talk of the Nation from NPR News.